This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. And on today's show, you're going to get to meet Paul Woolmington. Paul is the CEO of an agency in New York. It's a communications strategy firm called Naked Communications. On today's show, we're going to talk about media neutrality, brilliant misfits, what it's like to be an Englishman in New York, Ugandan mountain gorillas, and the Cannes titanium lions.
The idea Naked actually is a really interesting one because it really isn't just a funky name. The first premise of Naked is that brands today stand naked in front of the consumer, and that what client marketeers require more than ever before is the naked truth. And sometimes what's good is someone who's maybe had a dozen years experience in the business might have done two things in their career. They might have been in public relations, and then they may have been a strategic planner at an agency. They may have been a creative and then ended up being a digital strategist. So we quite like people that aren't frightened of change, that during the course of their lives they've adapted to the environment. It's great to be involved in pushing the industry and being restless and not allowing people to sort of fall back on legacy. And so, you know, certainly that most recent work, I think, stands as a testament to where the industry may be going.
Welcome, Paul.
Welcome, Susan. Great to be here.
I'm so glad we finally got you in a location long enough to have this conversation. You and I met maybe a year ago. You're on the board of AdTech now, and I had an opportunity to make your acquaintance and was instantly smitten with you and knew that someday our destiny would be to do a Dishy Mix together.
Well, the feeling's mutual because what you did at AdTech is amazing, and it's been great to be involved both, you know, for the last couple of years in AdTech.
Well, good. Well, just for our listeners who might not know you, I want to let them know what your past, your all of the sordid past you have, Paul. So first of all, you are really a veteran of the advertising business. I'd say coming more out of media now, but have really been moving from media to a more integrated concept or construct of where you think the world is going, one of the things we're going to talk about. But that all came from the fact that you've held positions as worldwide chief strategic officer and president of media operations at Young and Rubicam and the Media Edge. Before joining Y&R, you were worldwide media director at Amirati Puris Lintas in New York. And of course, starting out in the UK, you founded your own media firm called 2020 Media. And then you'd moved over from Y&R, founded and served as Media Kitchen's chairman and CEO, or head chef, as you like to say, just before you came to Naked Communications. And you're also really involved with creating the Media Lions at Cannes, as well as recently being part of the juror panel for the Titanium and the Integrated Cannes Lion programs. So I want to talk more about the world of awards and the world of Cannes, but I wanted everyone to know that you had this background where you came up through the media ranks, but you have a very different perspective on the world of integrated communications now at Naked. So let's just start with that. That's kind of the beginnings of media neutrality and into this, what I've read some things about the polygamous marriage of media. So tell us about that.
Thanks, Susan. I think you got it about right. I think basically, everything that I've done in my career has been somewhat restless. I've never liked to categorize myself purely as a media guy or as purely as a brand planner or as an agency operations manager. So within the marketing, within the realm of media, advertising, marketing, I would always say that sort of I was somewhat of a generalist. And then actually, when the idea Naked actually is a really interesting one because it really isn't just a funky name. The first premise of Naked is that brands today stand naked in front of the consumer, and that what client marketeers require more than ever before is the naked truth. objectivity in the way that actually you put a marketing communications plan together. So Naked actually was created under this premise that in order to be objective, you can't have a manufacturing output. If you're heavily involved in building websites and you've got a lot of technicians who build websites, then guess what? That's going to be, you know, potentially a bias in your recommendation. If you're an advertising agency, you know, as much as you protest objectivity and neutrality, then you'll solve the problem with media. You've got mouths to feed. And so I think what we realized was that what we wanted to be in the business of is solving business problems through the most objective channels. And I think that's where, you know, our sweet spot of Naked is. So really, we have a couple of other sort of guiding principles. Guiding principle one is that everything communicates. I think that's sort of fairly obvious, but when we talk about communications, we talk about everything from, you know, the way a telephone is answered to internal stakeholders to retail channels to, you know, every way in which a brand could communicate with any one of its stakeholders.
Didn't you put together something where you're like counting the touch points that a brand has with its consumer, like you're up to 120 now or something?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are thousands and thousands and thousands, many of which you can't measure, many of which are evolving every single day. So we try to think of everyone, but you're right, yes, we actually have various methodologies that can analyze and can look at in excess of 100 touch points, you know, multiple digital channels, multiple retail channels, all the traditional and non-traditional channels, and many of the emerging channels. Yeah, you're right.
So you really consider yourself an independent communications agency. You don't profess to have any bias toward particular media, particular creative. You know, you're kind of like the handyman that doesn't favor any particular tool. And a lot of times, in addition to working with clients like Coca-Cola, Nokia, Sony, Nike, J&J, Google, The Gap, you're working with agency partners like Strawberry Frog or Mother or RGA. How do those relationships work, and what part do you bring to it that an agency doesn't feel like they could do themselves? Like, how do they actually want to work with you? What do you do?
Well, first, yeah, I mean, great. Thank you for all that. But I think the first thing is that we help drive clarity, because I think what we try and do is step back, see a bigger picture. What is the business issue that we're trying to solve through communications? Help, and primarily we work directly with clients. So the work we do with agencies in the plural tends to be through the client. But actually what we're serving is a function that probably clients used to do internally, which is integrated marketing communications, is a sort of a fusion of business planning, marketing planning, and communications planning. And that's where our sweet spot is. So I think how we assist is first and foremost bringing alignment behind how you solve the business problem, prioritizing, helping clients prioritize what the task of communication is for any given issue that we're trying to solve. And through that, then understanding the best way, the best channels, the customer journey, et cetera, et cetera. So I think where we work really well with agencies and why agencies like working with us, agencies in the plural, is because I think we help them get to a better brief. We help them do better work. We help prioritize that you're not trying to put 20 things into one medium when actually that medium's really good at doing two things really well. And I think creatives love us because we also are a sparring partner for them to actually get to a better place. So, I think great ideas there is a wisdom in crowds. There is a wisdom in the collaborative process. And I think, occasionally ideas do come from, you know, standing in the bath and having a eureka moment. But actually, many times it's 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration that gets to big communication ideas that are going to really work across all of the channels, across all of the constituents. So that's where I think we help. And I think because we are not a threat, we do not have a manufacturing output, so we're not there to try and create ads or to build websites, et cetera, et cetera. We're there to really facilitate you know, great work, and so you know, and a lot of it's down to human relationships. Hopefully a lot of the people that we hire at Naked have a great sensitivity. They're either ex-clients, they've worked in the consulting fields, they've worked in different agencies, different aspects of agencies. So I think there is a sort of a high degree of sensitivity.
I want to come back to the people who work, you call the people who work at Naked brilliant misfits. I want to come back to that. But before I do, you were just talking about the fact that you aren't a manufacturer, you know, this idea that you don't specifically need to build websites or buy media. Brad Barron, someone we both know, someone who's been on Dishy Mix, he's the chief content officer of iMedia Connection and the ad tech conferences. He says that he wants to ask a question for you. This is your model of not actually making stuff to get higher up the food chain like a typical agency business model would be. He wants to know if an economic downturn will hit you harder than it would hit a more traditionally oriented agency company.
It's a great question. I don't think anyone's immune from economic downturns, but I think the proof of the pudding is in the eating at the moment. Our business is growing exponentially because I think clients have also grown frustrated, and they know that there must be a better way. So I think many clients are fed up of relying on a 1950s built model of the way that they either integrate or the way that big holding company communications companies try and pull the resources together. And ultimately, because I think clients feel overwhelmed, because there's more choice, doesn't mean to say you use more things. Actually, with more choice, you might use less things. But how, which specialist skills you need at the table to deliver might vary radically. So I think that many, many clients are moving towards. So I would say, so far, we have not been affected by the economic downturn. Partly because we're also an international business, but our domestic business is thriving. Last thing is, I think we're still, you know, there's so much more we could do for many, many clients out there. I mean, we are pretty unique. There isn't another company. There are companies that I think overlap on things that we do, but there isn't anyone that does what Naked does globally and here in North America in the way that we do it. Now, that's not even an arrogant statement. It's just a fact. And therefore, I think that there's, you know, so far we seem to have been benefiting from that. And each time we do more work with clients, we seem to get more and more references from our clients. Our clients are our best salesmen. We found, you know, one client is likely to recommend us to another one of their clients, because I think we tend to fit more as almost surrogate of the marketing function or of the, you know, strategic function within a client organization.
All right. So one of the things that you're doing is pulling together the disciplines of account planning and creative and media. And you talk about how you have a unique group of, I love your term, brilliant misfits who do this for you. So before we go to the break, Paul, I really want to check back on the brilliant misfits piece. I didn't want to drop that. I think I would like to be called that. And what I'm really trying to understand is who are these people that you're bringing into your company, and how are they different than where you'd find what you'd find in any agency? How does that make a difference? If you could give me an example of maybe a project you did or something like that, that would be interesting.
Great point, Susan. I think firstly we hire people from multiple disciplines. Internally, our structure is important as well. So we allow them to be misfits because they may have come from a digital background, but they get to work on brand strategy. They may have been a creative, but they get to not only be a creative, but also contribute to the strategy. So we don't have any really hierarchies or silos, which emancipates them to be brilliant misfits. But to give you some examples, you know, we've hired people from Nike. We've got people from, you know, brand planning backgrounds. We've got people who've got public relations backgrounds. We've got a number of management consultants. We've got people who've worked on the media side. And they've come to us and literally sit on a long trestle table. So I could be sitting next to an ex-creative from Goodby and an ex client from Nike. And opposite me can be someone who has a management consulting background. So to be a bit more specific, you know, when we've been working with clients like Nokia, we've been looking, you know, we've been helping them very strategically on you know, the long-term business planning that you know, it's quite heavy lifting business planning, you know, how they might go to market in 2009 and beyond. But actually, on the team, we've got an ex-creative from Goodby. We've got an ex-media person from Goodby and the Media Kitchen. We have a management consultant, and we have an ex-account person. So you might think that the project would lend itself to sort of business consulting, management consulting, but actually, we believe we're getting to a more powerful place, and I think the client also believes we're getting to a more powerful place with the combination of skill sets that we bring to the table. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a better understanding of not only the philosophy and the culture, but also how it actually physically manifests itself at a client level.
It does. It does make a difference. It's not the classic lineup that you would have from a more traditional agency. I get it. Thank you. All right. So I also want to hear more about some of the Cannes work that you've done around awards, mostly from the perspective of how can the people in our industry participate in those kinds of awards? We need to start getting more involved in that. So we're going to take a break, thank my sponsors. I actually have some special offers in this commercial break from some new sponsors, and I think you'll be interested. So when we come back, we'll talk about that and more about Paul's life growing up in Uganda and some of the other things that he's done that are really fun and interesting. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get to know a little bit more about Paul Woolmington, CEO of Naked Communications. Oh, wait, before we leave for the break, Paul, I forgot. You have some goodies for Dishy Mix listeners. Tell us what you have.
Well, we produced a limited print run House of Naked book, which is a lot of fun. So what I was thinking is we might autograph that and have a few of those. Plus also a Naked on tour, our world tour t-shirts. So there's a couple of goodies for you.
Excellent. All right. So if you would like to either have a personally autographed copy of the House of Naked book, sounds fun to me, or the Naked on Tour t-shirt, go to the Dishy Mix fan club on Facebook. Just post your request and Paul and I will award some books and some t-shirts to our favorite posts. So go ahead and do that and see if you can get some great swag. Now we'll go to the break. Thanks for the goodies, Paul.
Listen to Coaching the Life Coach, business and marketing strategies for growth of transformational practices, your guide in the 21st century marketplace on personallifemedia.com.
All right, we're back. So, Paul, I started an awards program in the interactive industry through the Ad Tech Award program called the Industry Achievement Awards. And we have been, for the last 2 years now, awarding individuals in the industry who have contributed far beyond and above their particular role or job in the industry to be someone who has really helped move the entire business of digital media and marketing forward. And I really am proud to have created that Industry Achievement Award. Some people like Rich Lafergy, Pete Blackshaw, Kate Everett Thorpe won it this year. And you've also done some similar things. You've been a juror and as well created some new awards. So tell us about your perspective on that and some of the work that you've done.
I think we both share that passion. I think the passion is there's got to be a better way. There's got to be, a way that we can evolve and recognize, what's happening today rather than the legacy. You know, a lot of awards are sort of based on legacy, siloed legacy structures. And we do need to celebrate the craft skills of whether it be, best website, the Webbies, but what we find is that things are much more multidimensional. So I think what we need to do is recognize, big ideas. We need to recognize how, the industry is changing. So, some specific examples. In the old days, the Cannes Advertising Festival was very, very biased towards the creative community, and it celebrated the craft of making TV spots and print ads and out-of-home posters. So way back in the late 90s, about a decade ago, I engaged in conversations with them to say, well, maybe media could be recognized because content and contact are pretty important, two sides of the coin on doing anything good. So I was lucky enough to have helped create the Media Alliance, which was one of the first additional competitions they created at Cannes and was the jury president back in 99. But more recently, I think what we're seeing is, again, the evolution of the awards system. And much like you did, I think recognizing, you know, brilliant thinking and keeping, you know, maybe awards a little bit more open source in the sense that, you know, we for the Clios, I again was involved in the creation of the Content and Contact Awards, where it was really sort of holistic thinking. It wasn't just, you know, you can have a brilliant creative execution, but if it didn't come with brilliant you know, placement or thinking about medium, context, and message together, then, you know, it's worthless. So it was also meant to democratize people who entered those awards. You didn't have to be just a brilliant creative director to win. You could have been, you know, hopefully what you were doing is, you know, great media people, great digital people could enter those awards. And then most recently this year, I was honored to be on the jury of the Titanium and Integrated Awards at Cannes. So Cannes has certainly evolved in the last decade, and now what they're doing is they've been very successful. They have, I think, over 10 different categories. They have the Cyber Lions, they have now design, they have media, they have print, TV. You know, they've obviously expanded it, but then what they then wanted to recognize, and I was honored enough to be one of nine jurors, where we were looking at, you know, where's the future of this industry going? You know, and when I say industry, I mean, you know, where's the future of communications going? Where's the future of marketing going? And so what they wanted was something much more open that allowed us to interpret the best out of the other awards. And and some examples were things like Uniqlo, which is the Japanese clothing company, have created an amazing piece of a body of work built around Uniclock, so UNIQLOCK.com, is, you could say it's a widget, which is a sort of clock that you might sort of download onto your desktop. But it's actually far more than that. It transcends its medium. It's a brand utility. It's a catalog. It's entertainment. It's 24/7. It's community. It allows you to blog. It's just an incredible piece of entertainment information, utility, all crammed into a widget that you download onto your... Now, is it a widget? Yes. But is it more than a widget? Absolutely. And so that was an example of something that we felt actually may have defied categorization because, you know, it wasn't a beautiful website. So now, as it happens, it did also win the cyber jury thought it was, you know, but I think it was something that showed where, you know, marketing can go. And so it's great to be involved in pushing the industry and being restless and not allowing people to sort of fall back on legacy. And so, you know, certainly that most recent work, I think, stands as a testament to where the industry may be going.
Well, I really appreciate you continuing to do something that's above and beyond just your own business and your own work to support the industry and to recognize an award for great thought and great work, and helping the young next generation in our industry move forward is also fabulous. And I know you do a lot of work there. You have a birthday coming up in just a few days. Are you going to be 46 or 47 by my count?
I think I'm going to be 47 by my count.
47.
1961. Yeah,
I'm born the same year. I'm just a few months older. I mean, like a month older than you. Isn't your? Are you August 27th?
August 27th.
I'm July 26th, 1961.
Wow.
We're like
amazing.
A month and a day apart.
Yeah, but one of the best birthday presents I've ever had, well, in fact, it is, of course, the only birthday, the best birthday present was my daughter, who's now nine, was born on the 27th of August as well.
Oh, no way. I have an 11-year-old daughter. You just have one daughter?
I have one daughter who's nine, and I have a son who's five. Gabriel.
Nice. And you live in Manhattan now for, what, about a dozen years?
Yep. Came over to this country 13 years ago and never looked back, and really, truly believe I'm a citizen of the world, but being in New York, I think you can continue to believe that as well. I'm now an American citizen as well, so we have dual nationality.
Congratulations.
American citizen for just coming up to 3 years. Children born here. But yeah, I live one block away from the office. We live and work in Soho in downtown Manhattan.
Nice. Love it. And you aren't originally from England. You're actually a Ugandan native. And for listeners who aren't able to go run to Wikipedia at this very moment, like I could do before I got on this call with Paul. Uganda is near Kenya and Tanzania. It's Southeast Africa, but inland, bordering Lake Victoria, the north part of Lake Victoria. And it's really where you'd go to see a lot of the mountain gorillas and things like that. So how long did you live there, Paul? How long were you in Uganda?
Well, I was born in South Africa. It just so happens my father's an academic, but he couldn't stand the apartheid regime that was there at the time. And he was blessed to get a posting at a great university, which is still in Kampala, which is the capital of Uganda. It's called Makerere University. And at his time, various luminaries like Paul Throw and V.S. Naipaul and people like that all happened to be there. Mm. So during the 60s, it
wonderful
was probably,
time.
You know, rather than lecturing in good old England or in America, you had the opportunity to have this adventurous lifestyle. So I lived there till I was about 12 or 13. And Uganda was various people have called it things, but one of the wonders was it was called the Pearl of Africa. It's very fertile, beautiful natural resources. It doesn't have a coastline, but it has a border on Lake Victoria, which is the largest lake in Africa. And it's just, the people are just wonderful. Africa is just a great continent, misunderstood by many people. Generosity of spirit and hope that people have in Africa and in Uganda in particular. Bearing in mind, it's also a country that has a lot of infamy attached to it.
Idi
Amin was there. We were there.
That was the 70s, right?
Yeah, we lived through I was there pre-Idi. There was a guy called Milton Obote, mm-hmm. who actually was as much a despot as Idi was, but Idi was just mad. So I think he got the public's attention subsequently to be made famous on various films from Radon Entebbe to books to, Forrest Whitaker's depiction of him in The Last King of Scotland, which was fabulous. But
that was such a great movie, wasn't it?
It was just amazing. I'm a BAFTA British Academy member, and I voted overwhelmingly not because there was a connection, but I thought it was one of those once in a lifetime performances that was just outstanding. So yeah, but brought back a lot of memories because actually they filmed the it's a fictional novel, but it's based a lot on obviously true fact. There's a little bit of fiction in there, but they actually shot it in Uganda. They got Museveni is the current benevolent dictator / premier there, and the country was left ravaged 20 years ago. And Uganda is of many of the countries in Africa is you could argue pretty well run, and it's back on its feet, which is amazing.
I bet that does your heart good. Do you ever go back there?
We've spent a lot of time. It's an incredible coincidence that my wife is also English, but she was born in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and
right by there
in Africa. But so we go back lots. Yeah, we've taken the kids. We were in we did Tanzania and Kenya with our kids a year and a half ago. We just love travel, and yeah, extensively travel. I mean, I'm extensively travel, but I don't know. Probably blessed to have been to maybe 13 or 14 different countries in Africa. The sadness is, I will confess, I've never been back to Uganda, and I certainly aim to rectify that soon. So in the next couple of years, I think we're planning a trip back to Uganda. But there's something that, going back to try and find where you lived, maybe there's a romantic vision of your childhood that might be somewhat abused by, what it represents today. So
well, it's going to look very small.
It
always surprises me when I go back and look at the things from my childhood, how the houses in which I grew up look so tiny, and just by today's standards things have changed so much. But
that's right.
Sounds like a great place to take your children. There's so many different, there's like 22 national parks just in Uganda alone. I think it's an incredible place for travel.
It is.
And you get to see the Ugandans. Well, I guess Ugandans are from different tribes, including the Swahili tribes,
Swahili.
Right?
Well, the weird thing
That's
was that when I
one of the big languages.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these borders were sort of cosmetically drawn, by colonists, they were drawn across, tribal boundaries. So in any country in Africa, you're highly likely to have multiple languages. As it happens, Swahili is very much a southeastern language. So it's a language that's often spoken in addition to a local language. So in Uganda, you could be a tribe in Uganda would be the Buganda,
mm-hmm.
and so they have their own language.
Bugandan.
Buganda, and the king of the king generally there is a titular king of Uganda, and he most often comes from the tribe, the Buganda tribe. But in addition to that, most people in Uganda would speak Swahili. And surprisingly enough, because East Africa was very much a British colony for many years, you know, English would also be, you know, well spoken in the major cities. But Swahili is, when I grew up as a child, I had a wonderful nurse called Mary, and had a very good friend who I grew up with, her son Ben, and she was Ugandan, and I spoke Swahili before I spoke English, much to the surprise and or shock of my grandparents when they came and visited. I was running around with probably, you know, a pair of shorts and nothing much else on, and speaking Swahili fluently and stumbling on my English. But my father happened to be a linguist as well, so you know, I think it was added to. I think that he probably spoke to me in Swahili as well. But no, fun times, and but you're absolutely right. The cultures are mixed, and that's what makes you know, it's an incredible place to visit. You know, as anywhere in the world, you know, people are different. They come from different places. So to call people Indian is, you know,
sure.
Also
leaving a little money on the table there.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, good. Well, we've got to let our listeners get back to their lives, Paul. The last thing that I want to know is what you're going to do to celebrate your birthday this year.
Great question. I now celebrate my birthday through my daughter's birthday.
Oh, right. Of course. So what kind of a party are you going to have, a theme party for her?
Well, I think what we're going to do, recently I was best man at a very good friend's wedding, and they're going to come from Sweden and the UK, and I've got some other very good friends who are going to come up. We happen to have a lovely place up in Connecticut. We often on Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard around that time, but this year we're going to be in northwest Connecticut in a place called West Cornwall, where we have a lovely, lovely place, and we're going to have some just wonderful friends, and I think India will get to invite some of her friends up. And you know what? Probably a lot of splashing in the pool and running around. Hopefully there'll be lots of apples on the trees, picking apples, making apple cider. Being a New Englander, I think.
That sounds really nice. West Cornwall. That sounds wonderful. I'm going to have to Google map that and see where that is. It sounds absolutely delightful. You'll be surrounded by friends and family and your beautiful son and daughter. And that is absolutely the way to celebrate your birthday in style.
Yeah.
Good. Well, Paul, I've really enjoyed having an opportunity to get to know you better, as has everyone who's listening today. So thanks for sharing a little bit of your perspective on the agency world, as well as your life and who you are as a person. So thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. I've so enjoyed it, Susan, being on Dishy Mix.
Good, Paul. All right. Well, have a great birthday. I doubt I'll talk to you before then. Enjoy your time off and have a great day.
And you.
All right. For all of you Dishy Mix listeners who would like to share this episode with your friends, I'd love for you to do that. You can just forward a link from personallifemedia.com. You can Google me on Dishy Mix, or you can join the Facebook fan club for Dishy Mix, where I give away all kinds of goodies from my guests. Thanks again for tuning in today, and I'll talk to you next week. I'm your host, Susan Bratton.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.